You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 25 November. We've got German GDP later this morning. Year on year, expected 0.3%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Jimmy Moyoha. Process results, cash flow positive. That's a biggie. And Harmony, going bigger on copper, their EVA copper project. They reckon they can get the copper out the ground at about $2.50 per pound. It's about half of where copper is at the moment. Stephen Joffe from Invicta, results largely debt-free, mining activity helping the capital equipment demand. And then we're chatting with Stanlib Asset Management on flying markets as economies stall, that disconnect between the two. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, lessons from valuing things. Discounts can be tempting and subjective. Subjectivity, while unavoidable, should be based on at least some research. Business Day, PPC turnaround gains pace as margins rise. Cement producer says is well positioned for provincial infrastructure products. Morning markets, US markets was green, S&P up 1.6%, and NASDAQ up 2.6%. Easter's mostly green, Sydney's down 0.5%, and we've got Tokyo 0.4% higher, Hong Kong up 1.1%, and Tencent 0.5%. Commodities, all green, gold futures, 4,177. Brent, 63.21. Platinum, 1,567. Palladium, 1,442. The Rand is 17.29. Bitcoin, 87,700. And top 40 opening call, green open, 425 points or 0.4% higher.
MoneyWeb Now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Jimmy Moyoha. Jimmy, appreciate the early morning process and NASPAS results yesterday. What's really stood out, I mean, this is still very much a 10-cent story, but it is starting to move away from it. And perhaps the key point was that cash flow from process operations ex the 10-cent dividend actually turned positive for the period ending September 2025, moving in the right direction. Although I don't know if they ever really do become a non-10-cent business unless they unbundle it.
Morning, Simon. Certainly moving away $1 billion at a time. The business did announce that their divestiture efforts over the last 6 months period were just north of $1 billion, around $1.2 billion, with plans to do another $2 billion in FY26. From a cash flow perspective, I mean, saying their cash flow positive is one thing, but when you really look at the numbers, it's a completely different picture as to just the extent of that cash on hand. I mean, having around $13.2 billion in cash on hand after the Just Eat acquisition and all the other moving parts is quite, I mean, impressive is one way to put it. Another way to put it would be the 220 billion rand of cash flow, of cash that they have on hand could finance Eskom's transmission line, or at least 50% of its transmission objectives. So from a business perspective, really, we're dealing with something that isn't a business South Africa would be used to. And this is probably why you're seeing them having to play in international waters. The sheer size of Prosus and Naspers as a business and what it is that they're able to do with that size and that balance sheet leaves them in a position that is enviable for many businesses, but also means that they can execute on pretty much any strategy they think of.
Yeah, it's actually a great point. They simply, I mean, they can't do it much in South Africa because they're just too big, as you say. And they can fund the transmission project, half of it. Harmony came out. I mean, they bought Mac Copper earlier, a couple of months ago. That deal's concluded. That gets Harmony into copper as well as their gold. Then I got the EVA Copper project also in Australia. They reckon they can mine at $2.50 per pound. Price is around $4.50, $5 at at the moment. I'm betwixt and betweened about this one. It means they're no longer a pure gold mine play, which I suppose is nice, but for investors it does mean that if you want to see the massive runs that we've seen more recently, you need both commodities to move, which might take some shine off future moves, although it might also maybe reduce some downside.
Well, you don't necessarily need both of them to move. I mean, if you're thinking about it from the way Harmony is looking at it, you're divesting your business and diversifying yourself out of a concentrated asset that has run more than 100% into an asset that has utility, that is part of greener, cleaner energy. Copper remains one of the only assets that's almost 95% recyclable, so you're not really going to be losing out too much from that perspective, especially if you are on the mining side of it. And to top that off, it currently trades at about a tenth of the gold price. So really, it is a smart diversification from Harmony's perspective. And if you look at the EVA project in particular, set to go online in 2028, yes, but part of that project still does include gold. About 25%, of the production there would be gold related. The other 75% would, of course, be the copper side of things. But if you're looking to strategically pivot a business that owns the deepest mine in the world into something new and into a new area of expertise, I mean, there's no doubt that from a gold mining perspective, Harmony is unmatched. They don't need to prove that to anyone anymore. And from a returns perspective and a return profile, for them to be able to continuously kind of move that business into the next era or into its next life cycle. Mines have a finite life cycle. Yeah. They can't be gold miners forever. And to move into an asset like copper is probably strategically for them the best thing they could do.
I take that point. It's sort of transition perhaps more than anything else. And I like that idea. Maybe that is better. And you know, their copper is probably always going to be profitable because they've got a fairly low all-in sustained costs there. We'll leave it there. Jimmy Moyaha, appreciate the early morning time. Our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. What are your thoughts on that Harmony expansion or increasing expansion into copper? Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Stephen Joffe, CEO at Invicta. Results for 6 months ending September, revenue up 6%, HEPS up 15%, cash on hand, $931 million. Stephen, let's start with cash on hand. We paid the preference shares a while ago, and you mentioned in the results that you're looking to keep your balance sheet relatively debt-free in the current environment, and certainly that's working. You've got a good-looking balance sheet and generating cash.
Yes, thank you. It's been very, very good. We've done a huge amount of de-gearing over the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And we practically have no debt left in the group. And this enables us to return about 30% of our earnings annually to shareholders, be it through buybacks or dividends. And it also allows us, with disciplined capital allocation, to continue our geographic diversification strategy of buying businesses offshore or buying businesses locally if things start improving.
Yeah, and part of it was 3.1 million shares repurchased and cancelled. You mentioned acquisitions. You've done some. There's the Spaldings in the UK. You also mentioned that you're particularly tensions in Eastern Europe, looking for some things perhaps west into Europe. You're not looking necessarily for giant acquisitions, but ones that fit the business, and particularly, as you say, offshore at this point, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's been our strategy for a while, geographic diversification. And, you know, we're pretty proud last year when we did our results that more than 50% of our net profit came from our offshore businesses. Yeah. We are, for the first time, also very interested in looking at one or two South African opportunities. We're seeing very good opportunities in the mining space in South Africa and Africa. Mm-hmm. And I know it's early days and green shoots, but it's piquing our interest.
You mentioned mining because, of course, Capital Equipment doing very well. And that, by and large, thanks to mining. And, of course, I mean, precious metals get all the headlines, but there's a lot more mining in South Africa outside of sort of PGMs and gold as well.
Absolutely. I mean, we service so many different types of mines. But, you know, it is the backbone of our industrial economy.
Yeah, it absolutely is. When we chatted, which would have been results 2 year in March, and of course, we had a sense what was coming with tariffs, but we didn't quite know. Since then, I'm not sure we do know, but we know that there are tariffs. How's that impacting? I mean, in some places, it must hurt more than others.
So as you know, we have our roller factory in China. Mm. and we supply many customers, but we also supply the United States. So the US tariffs affected us when they were very high and when there was uncertainty about them, the magnitude. Our American clients didn't order for those reasons. Mm-hmm. It's ultimately settled, and it seems to be in let's call it the reasonable range relative to all the others, Korea, Japan. But we actually need finality. We need to see where it actually settles finally, and then we can make a determination whether we try to do more manufacturing in Japan or that we continue supplying America out of China.
I get your point. And your Kenan also did an acquisition operating in Texas. Is that a tariff strategy, or was that beyond tariffs and not really? Because I noticed it was 1st of May, so we didn't really have great insight at that point.
No, that is like a very nice aftermarket business. It supplies cab gloss for a wide variety of capital equipment. It's probably the biggest supplier of cab gloss outside the OEMs. And we just found this a very nice opportunity through our management of our American businesses.
Okay, cab gloss. I hadn't thought of that, but of course they have gloss, absolutely. You mentioned it, the industrial sector, which is industrial solutions and parts. I mean, it's profitable, no mistake around that. But it is, I mean, our manufacturing sector, it continues to struggle. And this is a cliche, but some GDP growth. I mean, even if we only get the 1.8% that the minister spoke about at the medium-term budget policy statement, is a big step in the right direction and should help your industrial solutions.
Yeah, I always feel like we are a coil and it's just primed to explode. But, you know, if I could just say this, Simon, like the industrial sector remained tough.
Yeah.
But our resilient aftermarket value chains consisting of parts, maintenance and engineering support services remained strong. What actually impacted our results this year was a lack of liquidity in Mozambique.
Okay.
And the result of that, we had to hold back some of our supply products to our branches, which ultimately affected our top line sales.
Gotcha. And does aftermarket, because you're in the aftermarket, if I'm a manufacturer, I'm trying to sweat my asset. I might not want to buy a new capital equipment. And that means I phone up your aftermarket and engage with them. There's actually perhaps a little bit of upside to that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, as people sweat the assets more, actually our businesses get better.
Yeah. A last question, selling, administration, distribution costs up 11%. There was a one-off included in that, which makes perhaps it more in line with the revenue growth.
Exactly. If you strip out the ones of profits on disposal and one month of operating costs of Spaldings and the deal costs of Spaldings, you'll see our costs actually increased by 6%, which was pretty much in line with revenue and in line with our stringent like cost control in our businesses.
Yeah, it sits with revenue. And then, of course, we got the leverage impact to HEPS up 15%. We'll leave it there. Stephen Joffe, CEO and Victor, always appreciate the time.
Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Peter van der Ross, head of multi-asset at StanLib Asset Management. Peter, appreciate the time again. A disconnect often we see between sort of markets and economies, where in our stock market's perhaps a perfect example this year. Brilliant stock market, but we don't have any GDP. The US, you know, concerns around jobs, but the market's doing incredibly well. There is a disconnect between what we call Wall Street and Main Street.
You know, Simon, there is and there isn't. Clearly, at a high level, yes, you're right. GDP looks fairly pedestrian, and the stock market, in fact, our local stock market's been one of the strongest globally this year. But if you look at some of the domestically oriented sectors in the market, so something like our general retailers index, that's down 22% so far this year. And that does reflect that, you know, domestic consumers, households are struggling, tightening their belts a bit, but that's got to be, you know, set against something like our resource sector, which is mostly driven by precious metals now, having done 110% odd so far this year. And so, yes, if you average those out, and then, of course, we've got the other big global companies listed, right? Naspers, et cetera. Those geographies have done very well with the Chinese focus on AI and their drive into big tech. So if you average out the market performance, yes, very strong, but it's in a way similar to averaging our GDP performance, which is, you know, there are few companies, individuals doing very well, and then there are a third of our people unemployed. So the averages do skew the reality somewhat. If you look under the hood, though, the individual bits do reflect the underlying reality.
I take the point. An index is lovely, but it's just, it's general. We need to perhaps delve into it. What about issues such as, I'm thinking liquidity, I'm thinking fiscal deficits. How do these impact the sort of markets and asset prices? Because of course there's equities, but there's commodities, there's bonds, there's other assets as well.
Yep. So we think liquidity is one of the key drivers of asset markets. We use what we call six lenses in our tactical positioning approach. Mm-hmm. And liquidity is, at this stage, we think one of the more important lenses. The other one actually at the moment is momentum, being a very important driver of markets. And we would include fiscal flows under that broad liquidity banner. So, you know, liquidity is a fairly simple concept in that where money flows, prices get bid up or inflated, and where money leaves, prices deflate. So it's that old concept of the rising tide lifting all boats and the opposite holding true. And so these are key cyclical developments that drive financial markets that one absolutely has to be on top of.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I mean, when liquidity is flowing, then that's where the action is. What about geopolitics? Because of course, you know, again, geopolitics is in a sense outside of economies, but it's not. It's square and center. And we've got defense budgets. We've got central banks suddenly buying gold. So that suddenly is a is an important part. Perhaps it always is. It just ebbs and flows as to how important. And we're seemingly sitting at a juncture of higher importance.
Correct. And I would say there's another element to that, and that is that we have across many geographies globally, we have coalition governments that tend to be fairly difficult to hold together, which is why clearly our domestic GNU holding together so far has been such a win for financial markets and for the man in the street.
Yeah.
But what happens is when you have these weak governments is that fiscal discipline is hard to come by because the politicians don't have the sufficient backing from the voter base to take the difficult decisions. Mm. And so you've got soft decisions happening, you've got monetary excess, you've got fiscal excess, and that's good for financial markets because, again, what that means is under that liquidity banner, you've got a lot of capital flowing into markets. So, for example, something like the defense sector, it's been a sea change this year so far where a country like Germany has loosened their fiscal brake. And that's clearly to be able to spend on defense. It's a sector we've been able to profit from for our clients. And there will be other secular type flows on the way because, as you say, these geopolitical developments are fairly slow moving. But when they do come to a head, boy, oh boy, you've got to sit up and take notice.
Yeah, and I like that point around coalition governments. I hadn't actually thought of that. You can't make those hard decisions. The current environment, and I always say, you know, we live in interesting times. I think we've always lived in interesting times, and we maybe we kind of overemphasize our current interest in terms of times. But how do you and your team sort of look at balancing that risk and that diversification portfolio? Because that really is then the pointy part of it in many senses.
Yes. Well, I think the first thing is to, as a team, is to keep each other honest and to ensure that we stick to our disciplines, stick to our process. Because the reality is, although we are professional money managers, as human beings, we are no less fallible than any other investor in terms of being falling prey to one's emotions, et cetera. So you have to stick to your process. And as I say, at this point in our process, we say we've got to lean quite heavily on our momentum indicators, liquidity indicators. And yes, those do need to be balanced by some diversification. But at the end of the day, clients pay us to generate real returns. And so we've got to stay invested.
And I like that idea around process, because what process does is it make one of the key points of a good investor is that discipline. And that process sort of feeds into and helps create that discipline to the process.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Without those disciplines, as I say, we would be as vulnerable to being swayed by headlines as anyone else. I think the biggest mistake we can make as professionals is to think we are somehow superhuman. Well, that's an interesting point. Perhaps we can talk about AI at some point in the future. But I mean, these sorts of alternative quantitative type tools really do help keep us honest and keep us sticking to where we need to be.
We'll get you back for that AI talk. That's Peter van der Ros, Deputy Head Multi-Asset at Stanlab Asset Management. Appreciate the time. That's it for today. We were chatting with Nick Kunze from Sanlam Private Wealth yesterday, talking about the CellC IPO. Their price range had been, what, $29.50 to $35.50, and then they did it at $26.50 and didn't allocate all the shares. But listings going ahead, that'll happen on Thursday. We asked you if you applied for shares. Three quarters said not for you. Rest split between, nope, you will buy on listing, and the rest saying yes, should be great.
This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Octodec results.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.